Welcome to Lost River Legends. Our motto, Ex Tenebris, is Latin for out of the shadows. We attempt to understand the complex world around us and bring light to subjects hidden in darkness. We explore paranormal topics with guests from all around the world. Now welcome your Lost River Legends hosts, James and Brett. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello everyone, welcome to Lost River Legends. I'm one of your hosts, James. Brett will be joining us shortly. Today we have an exciting guest, Stan Gordon from Pennsylvania. He is an investigator of UFOs and Bigfoot and is marking his 60th year in the investigation field in that area. Stan approaches the subject very pragmatically and from a data standpoint. Over those 60 years and brings to us some insights that you don't want to miss. These Bigfoot sightings often involve UFOs, other strange phenomena. Stan approaches his investigations from a crime scene investigation standpoint. He has started and been a part of many different groups over the years and has a great and vast understanding that he shares with us. Thank you and enjoy the show. Welcome to the show, Stan.
Oh, thank you for having me on this evening.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be here. We'd like to get, for our listeners, we'd like to get a little bit of an introduction of your background, kind of how you got into this and how you've been doing this for 60 years and how that began for you.
Well, I started this a long time ago, back in 1959 when I was 10 years old. And it's just a matter of circumstance how it began. My birthday happens to be during the Halloween season. And it was on my 10th birthday when my parents decided that they were going to give me a birthday gift, and it turned out to be an AM radio. And during that period of time, I was tuning the radio that one evening. And because of the Halloween season, there were some radio shows, and they were talking about those strange things that go on, from haunted houses to strange lights in the sky to mysterious creatures. And I was listening to these programs and listening to this talk about it, and I was wondering, gee, are these people telling the truth? They make these stories up. So that's when I began to frequent our local library, and I began to read all the books available and began to scrutinize the newspapers and cut clippings out of something that happened. And that's how it all began for me. And I was 16 years old in 1965 when the incident happened near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And so I began documenting that case as it was breaking on the news late that afternoon, actually early that evening. And after the Kecksburg case, I began to go out to the field to do firsthand investigation on UFOs, Bigfoot, cryptids, other phenomena. And I've been out there ever since. And 1969, I decided to set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. And back in 1969, there was a lot more ridicule than there is today. But I tried to handle it very seriously. I began to make contact with local police and the newspapers and told them what I was doing. And within weeks, as information is getting out there about my hotline, the phone in my house is just ringing day and night. And people are calling in about not only UFO sightings, but anything unusual. So I'm getting calls on ghosts and haunted houses and flying saucers and strange noises and weird footprints and anything strange, the calls were coming in. Well, it got to the point very quickly that I couldn't do this all on my own. and I decided that I was going to try to organize a volunteer group of research people. So 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer research groups to investigate pennies in Pennsylvania for many years. The first group was called the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. So we're centered about 30 miles east of Pittsburgh. And I started the group. We started small. And I was trying to set up the group to be more of a research group. And that's what I did. And the people who got involved, and even to my surprise, were scientists and engineers and research people. I had people associated with colleges and universities. I had police officers. We ended up with former military intelligence officers, all kind of specialists. And we all did this around our full-time jobs. We all did this voluntarily. And so we extended into the Pittsburgh area. And by 1973, we had extended to cover the whole state of Pennsylvania. And we were extremely busy with reports coming in from many, many resources. And actually, we were pretty surprised when we started getting referrals from law enforcement agencies and from the news media. And it was an amazing time to live through with all the reports coming in. And back in those days, there was a lot of equipment that wasn't available, so we built our own equipment from night vision equipment. And we had radiation equipment. We had magnetic detectors and a lot of equipment. You know, we had a pretty good setup of equipment, but of course we were still limited on what we could do. But we were very, very busy. And so we continued, and then 1973 comes around, and it's lucky that we are already set up, because Pennsylvania experienced first probably the largest wave of UFO sightings ever documented, with hundreds and hundreds of UFO reports going on all year. And then in the summer of 73, we experienced the biggest Bigfoot wave that ever occurred. So those are some of the things that I got involved with many years ago, and it's been an interesting journey ever since then.
It sounds like the weirdness never wore off quite, but that there's different patterns in what's kind of manifested in that area in the Chestnut Ridge. And we'll get into the Chestnut Ridge a little bit later. But definitely an outstanding background that you have. You bring so much expertise and so much just a great voice for speaking for the scientific side of things and trying to bring that voice of reason to things. So I really appreciate that.
Well, yes, but very interesting. And now my hotline has never stopped ringing since 1969. It's continually receiving reports of current and past reports. And, of course, through my website, which is stangordon.info, I receive many emails as well. So reports come in by phone and by email, and we're continually getting reports. Last year, 2018, was very active with a lot of very amazing Bigfoot encounters and all kind of other phenomena. And interestingly, it's actually been continuing into 2019, even in the bad weather in the winter months. We're getting more than normal reports coming in of various phenomena. So it's been a very interesting time period.
You know, that's something that I've been hearing in the Bigfoot community in particular, is that it seems to be a rise in sightings and activity. And the question that arises from that is that because there's more human encroachment, or is it because there's actually more of these creatures making their way into, you know, into areas where people are? You know, is it the other way around?
I'm not sure anybody really has that answer. While I get reports from all across the state, yeah, we get a lot more reports here in the southwestern portion. But, you know, Pennsylvania is just covered with thick forests and woods. We have a lot of mountain ranges. The Chestnut Ridge, which, of course, you had mentioned a little bit ago, Chestnut Ridge is not far from where I'm located. The Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that extends in southwest Pennsylvania through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County. It extends about 100 miles into parts of West Virginia, down around Preston County, West Virginia. Historically, probably one of the most active areas in the country along the ridge for year after year phenomena. So we receive UFO reports, Bigfoot encounters, other cryptid reports from the giant thunderbirds, these huge flying creatures people reporting more and more in the last 10, 20 years, Black Panther sightings, other types of weird entities, all kind of weird phenomena up on the ridge, from mystery booms to underground sounds to just all kind of strange things. And it's been going on for years and years. I first began to really hear about the ridge when I was investigating some UFO incidents back in the late 1960s. And people started telling me about the accounts that they had heard not far from there of the things up along the Chestnut Ridge. And over the years, now I've been involved in multitudes of investigations all through the Ridge area. The earliest firsthand Bigfoot encounter I investigated, where I actually interviewed the witness, goes back to 1931 up near Indian Head in Fayette County. So Fayette County continues to be very active with various reports, but the Ridge has had some amazing cases even in the last several months. And it's just amazing, the reports come in. And you got to remember, these reports are coming in from many different people, from widespread areas. You don't, 99% of them, they don't know each other. And almost, I would say, more than 90% of the people I interview want no publicity whatsoever. And the reports come in from people from all walks of life, men, women, children, and I mean, police officers and hunters and farmers and doctors and lawyers and pilots. I mean, all kind of reputable people who are seeing these things, and they have absolutely no reason to make up the story because they're not seeking any publicity. They just want answers as to what they encountered. And so it's been a very interesting phenomena going on up along the ridge and many other areas as well.
You know, with all the different reports that you've had and the different setups that you've had with teams, et cetera, I would imagine that you've refined your process of gathering data. And what's some of that methodology that you could share with us, and how did that evolve?
Well, you know, back when my groups, I haven't had my groups for quite a while now. We had them for years and years, from basically 1970 into 1993. Since then, I've been working as an independent researcher, but I still maintain contact with many other researchers in Pennsylvania and also across the country and around the world. And so we learned a lot. Back when I had my groups and we had all these research people, well, we did a lot of training. We had specialists in forensics. We learned how to interview people. We learned how to make casts. We learned how to gather samples. We had various companies that had analytical laboratories, and they made some of those available over the years as professional courtesies. But we learned how to go out there, and what was so intriguing, and again, I had a lot of different very skeptical scientists who started out the field with me investigating these reports. And many of these fellows spent years with me out in the field. Some of these fellows were still around. And when they began to go out there, they were very skeptical. But over a period of time, as they began to interview large numbers of witnesses who didn't know each other from widely separated areas, they began to see the emotion. They heard those little details from people. They saw the physical evidence at the scene. Because in many cases, we were on the scene within minutes to hours after these incidents happened. That's why we were able to document them so well. We saw the animal reactions. That's something you couldn't fabricate when a Bigfoot was close to even the most ferocious dogs. And over a period of time, when you see all the similarities and the different patterns, you begin to realize there's something going on out here. We just don't know what it is we're dealing with. I'm not so sure anybody does. And one thing I've learned over the years, especially since the 73 outbreak, and even with some of these very recent reports that are suggesting more and more that the Bigfoot phenomena is much stranger and much more complex, and may well indicate more and more that we're dealing with a phenomena that may be even stranger than an unknown flesh and blood creature.
That's just fascinating information. And it kind of leads me to a question. You're mentioning that you see spikes in sightings, and 2018 was really a big year for like Bigfoots, and even so far this year, are you collecting data to analyze, you know, is there a ratio of sightings for Bigfoots and UFOs that's higher one year or lower the other? Or do you see any trends or anything else that stands out that might help your investigations?
Well, Bigfoot reports, UFO reports, they came in every year. There's been nothing close to the 73, 74 outbreak. Nothing's ever happened since like that. And yeah, over the years, you do get some spikes where you have a little more reports than usual. But what's interesting about some reports last year was, one, many of these were not distant sighting reports. They were very close range, and I can go over some of them with you. Some of these were in daylight. Some of the reports were people within just feet of the creature. And so that's what's so intriguing is it's the quality of the reports coming in as well. And, I mean, one of the sightings that was very intriguing just happened last November. This was outside of Pittsburgh, down in the Mon Valley area. So the Mon Valley is an area along the Monongahela River area, and it's basically a lot of these small communities down there parallel along the river, but it's had a long history going back many, many years of Bigfoot sightings. I've been down there since at least the early 70s investigating reports. But this particular case, it was a very rainy night, dark night. This fellow was driving down this two-lane country road, and suddenly he noticed that there was something standing on the left side of the road as he's approaching, and he slowed down and moved up a little, put on his high beams. And as he did, this huge hair-covered creature walked out onto the road, stopped 5 feet in front of his vehicle, and just looked right into his eyes, and it had luminous, glowing red eyes just stared at him. And this guy gave probably one of the best detailed physical descriptions of a creature I've heard in years. He caught a hold of me within 15 minutes after it happened, and you could just hear, I mean, he was trembling on the phone. I mean, he was very, very, very shook up. When we went down to meet him the next day where the sighting happened, I mean, he was physically very shook up over the incident. There's no doubt about it. But he was still able to give us a very, very detailed account of the 7-foot-tall creature covered with shaggy brown and black hair over much of the body. But he said it looked like it was unhealthy, as though it was sick. And he said that was because there was hair missing or sparse hair on certain parts of the body, like it may have had mange. Now, we've heard a few reports like this over the years, not that common. But he went into the nose, how the cheeks were sunk in, and they looked unhealthy. He went into about the hair on the different parts of the body. He could see the very long arms and legs. And he said the hands were about twice the size of a human. They were brown in color and hairy. But he said the eyes were just amazing. He said they looked like they were beet red. He said they looked directly at him, eye to eye, and then it turned. It was so close to him at first, he couldn't see the bottom of the legs because it was so close to him. And then as it moved off to the right up the small grade of a slight heel, he could see its very long arms and legs. And he followed it in his vehicle, just right behind it, was trying to get his camera lit up to get a picture of this thing. And he said all of a sudden it was there in front of him, and all of a sudden it was just gone. And that was very odd to him, how it just was suddenly not there anymore. And, we tried to speculate, well, could it possibly have gone out of the general area of the headlights? But his eyes are already adjusted to the dark. This thing is large, very broad-shouldered, and he couldn't understand why it just was not there anymore. But we've been hearing more and more cases like that. And I'd have to go back and give you some history about some of the very weird things that are going on with Bigfoot. And but I'll give you an example just to tell you about some of the other reports that were coming in. Up there on the ridge back in September last year, a gentleman was riding down the road that night, rainy night again. I believe it was about 75 feet away. And all of a sudden he sees this thing. He said it just appeared out of nowhere. And he said, I believe he said about 6.5, 7 feet tall, he estimated, very broad-shouldered. He said he could see the huge, massive chest on it. It was kind of stooped over. And he said the strangest thing was he couldn't clearly see the bottom part like its legs. It appeared to be gliding or floating above the road into a field and disappeared. And then it was just, a couple weeks later that another witness only a short distance away on top of the Chestnut Ridge on the Derry side, which that was in Derry Township, and that's the area along the ridge outside of Lake Tropier where we get pretty much yearly reports of weird things going on from different people. October of last year. Beautiful morning. This person is taking a walk along the tree line, and here's this loud knock against the tree, and looking about 20 feet away, moves into the woods, and there's this a very large, dark old tree trunk, and the person realizes there's this 7-foot-tall, shaggy creature with its arms completely wrapped around the tree as though it was trying to camouflage itself so it couldn't be seen. And that person got a really good look at this thing. This person is very familiar with a bear in the area, said this thing had its cheek against the trunk of the tree. It had very dark eyes, much larger than a human, and was looking directly at her. And she knew this was no bear, and she ran. She was very shook up. She ran to another tree about 10 feet away to get her composure and to set her camera up there, try to run up to get a picture of this thing. And a short time later, she runs towards the area where it was to get a picture, and it's gone. But like she said, you know, this thing is only about 10 feet away. It was big. I didn't hear any sound of anything moving in or moving away. It just wasn't there anymore. And so that's an example of just some of the reports that are coming in, and there are so many other ones. And then to just show you the complexity of the phenomena we're dealing with, November, again, of last year, this is actually only miles from where I live between Greensburg and Delmont. I talked to the driver of one of the vehicles involved. He had a passenger in the car, and what he told me was they're riding down this four-lane highway that evening. There's another car passing him. Suddenly, it both slowed down the middle of the road because here's where they have their headlights up, and here's this 8-foot-tall creature with very broad shoulders, long arms and legs, standing in the middle of the highway. They stood there and looked at this thing, put their high beams on, and he said the weirdest thing was it never turned and walked away. It just vanished and disappeared right in front of us. And the guy in the other car pulled up next to him, put his window down, said, "Did you see that?" And he took off. And so, I mean, this is just an example of some of the strange reports we've been getting. And, again, over the years, I've continued to see this going on. We seem to be seeing more of these reports recently. And it's not just in Pennsylvania. It's around the country and even other parts of the world. I've been hearing about these reports for years, which suggests, again, that there's more to Bigfoot than just an unknown primate, which may well be why there's no bodies of these creatures.
Well, and, you know, it's good that you bring that up, because I think that is an area that, you know, some people don't want to touch. They don't want to dip their toe into that arena of, you know, Bigfoot having this paranormal or this, you know, interdimensional aspect, if you will. So it's refreshing in a way, because if these things are actually happening, then we need to all know about them. And what better way to do that than to have a reporting center where you actually receive those and collect it in a scientific manner?
Yeah, well, I first began to realize this. It came to our attention back during this massive Bigfoot wave of 73. And I'll tell you a little bit about it because it was so fascinating. As I mentioned, first we had this major UFO wave went on all year in Pennsylvania. And many of those UFO reports were not lights in the sky. These were large structured crafts, low to the ground. I mean, you got reports of a big disc and big cigar-shaped objects and triangular objects, but in some cases, they're hovering over highways or report on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They're hovering over cars. There were landing reports. And back in those days, there was a lot of media coverage. So they were actually covering it both locally and nationally in our investigations, all these sightings going on. You know, I go into great detail about this in my Silent Invasion book. And that was strange in itself because we were busy just handling UFO reports. Then we get this major outbreak of Bigfoot in the summer of 73 that continued into 74. And so many of those Bigfoot reports were close range, many were in daylight. In some cases, you had more than one creature seen together. In many cases, there would be physical evidence at the scene. So my teams or the police or sometimes both were out there documenting this as it was happening. And one of the things that began to show up that began to make us scratch our heads of what we're dealing with was there will be a series of footprints that would suddenly stop and vanish and disappear where there should have been tracks, even in fresh snow. And that's still going on even in recent weeks. So that was one of the weird things. And then we began to see various patterns. And one of the patterns was we would have a UFO sighting in a certain location. Within minutes to hours, days later, we would have a Bigfoot sighting, or vice versa. And then it got much more interesting. Then we began to have incidents where we had both a UFO and Bigfoot seen together at the same time and place. And some of those cases were extremely detailed, amazing reports, but they got stranger and stranger. And if you want, I'll be glad to go into some of those reports. But it was a particular incident, among others, that really made us realize that we're dealing with something much stranger than an unknown animal. And that was along the Chestnut Ridge, up near Ohio Pyle in Fayette County, in February of 1974. And I remember that very well. And it was during a major national event. There was a national trucker strike going on. Some of your listeners will probably remember, because there was gas rationing taking place across the country. So I couldn't get up to the next morning because I couldn't get gas to get up in that area. And there was a lot of violence on the roadway at the time. So in Pennsylvania, State Police, National Guard were doing their patrols together. So they both responded to this incident. And this took place deep up in the mountains of Fayette County. And the person to focus it on was this woman who lived in the mountains all her life. She lived in a little cabin up there. She knew animals very well. She was a very good shot, pretty much fearless, wasn't really afraid of much of anything. And she was sitting there that one evening in February of 74, and she heard this noise, this racket on her little front porch. She had some empty cans of pop sitting out there. Someone was knocking the pop cans around. And she had recalled a couple weeks before there was a pack of wild dogs coming through and figured the dogs probably had returned. So she just decided, you know what, I'll grab my shotgun and I'll fire over their head and I'll scare the dogs out of there. So she does load her shotgun with one chamber and she proceeds to turn on the porch light and she walks to the front door and steps out. And interestingly, there's no dogs, but only a few feet in front of her is this huge, hairy, Bigfoot-like creature with its arms straight up over its head. What's her reaction? She fires right into it with her shotgun. She said there's this bright flash of light, just like you'd see like a flash going off on a camera, and it physically disappeared right in front of her. Now, her relatives lived only about 100 feet away. They heard the shot. They called her on the phone, and she tried to tell them what happened. And, of course, they were a little shook up, too. But her son-in-law grabbed his sidearm, his pistol, and began to move towards her cabin in the dark. He said as he got closer, he was surrounded by five or six hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, started shooting at him randomly, and he proceeded to go into the house. And it was about that time that they noticed a strange, large object, like a big Christmas ornament with different lights on it, hovering over the wooded area at the same time. That's when they called the state police. And as I mentioned, I couldn't get up to the next morning. Now, when I got up there, everything was back to normal. I talked to the primary state trooper, the investigator, and he said when he got up there, something very strange was going on. He said the animals would not make a sound. They had several dogs up there. Wouldn't bark, wouldn't move. They had horses and cattle. And the people up there said, who lived there with the animals said they had never seen them react like that before. But very commonly, in many of the close Bigfoot reports we had with animals, especially the most vicious dogs, they're just like paralyzed. They don't bark, they don't move, they cower, they hide, they shake. And sometimes it's a while before they're back to normal. Now, by the time I got up there the next morning, the dogs were barking at us, so they were back to normal. But whatever happened that night was something apparently was very, very strange. That was the case, and there were others that seemed to suggest that whatever we're dealing with had a physical and a non-physical component to it. And as reluctant as I am to say it, more and more data suggests we're dealing with something that, for lack of a better term, is interdimensional. That these, whatever they are, these creatures, and it may not just be Bigfoot, it might be other cryptids as well, and certain type of UFOs and other phenomena, that under certain conditions, these things come into our physical reality. They can look physically solid, but sometimes they're not completely solid. They can leave physical evidence, and then they appear and disappear, which is why there's no bodies. And we're continuing to receive reports in the snow from different people of footprints that suddenly begin out of nowhere, go quite a long distance with a very long stride, and suddenly vanish and disappear. And under the circumstances, there's no way these photographs could be fabricated, or the cases could be fabricated.
You know, that raises an interesting point, and that's something that the Navajo Rangers, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but there are a couple of guys that have done law enforcement on the Navajo reservation for well over 20 years. And they claim the same thing with the Bigfoot encounters down there, that they get, you know, footprints that start and that just drop off out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So that corresponds with that really closely.
I began writing about this in the early 70s after all the investigations we were doing. And I had contact with many, what was then well-known researchers around the country and also other parts of the world, and many of them were very much aware of these cases. But because they were so strange, they didn't want to publicize it because they didn't want to get in trouble with their peers. And, you know, this has been a subject where the people in the UFO field don't want to associate UFOs with Bigfoot, and the people in the Bigfoot field don't want to connect Bigfoot with UFOs. My position is, as an investigator, I don't have the answers. This is what's turning up. This is what we're documenting. And, you know, it's still going on. We don't have the answers. And I keep trying to let people understand that I'm not suggesting that I'm saying that Bigfoot is some kind of a creature riding around in a spaceship from another planet, because we don't know for sure what the UFOs represent. I mean, there have been many, many theories for years. I've said for a long time that there's likely more than one origin to the unknown category of UFOs. Maybe a small percentage could be extraterrestrial, but it looks like more and more we're dealing with a phenomenon that's energy connected and has the ability to physically change form, to be physically solid at times, can leave evidence, and then it's gone. And there's so many cases, and it's ongoing. I mean, I'm in touch with many of the current well-known researchers across the country and many others who keep a little quieter about it, but they have the same data coming in. It's much more common than people realize. And I'm thinking maybe 6-7 years ago, I spoke at the McMinnville, Oregon UFO conference out there on this subject. That was right in the middle of a heavy Bigfoot concentrated area. And I gave a lecture on this particular subject. And I was amazed at the really positive reaction I got. And some of the primary Bigfoot investigators from out there contacted me, and they said they were so glad that I brought this up because they're having the same thing out there. They have the tracks that disappear, people shooting these things, they vanish. And it's something that a lot of people didn't want to talk about, but I can tell you in the last few years, more and more people in the Bigfoot field are beginning to ask the same question I am. For example, why don't we have a body of Bigfoot by now? Whatever these things are, they've been around for a long time. Something similar has been seen throughout the country and around the world, and still no bodies. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's an interesting correlation between the UFO sightings and the Bigfoot. And I wanted to get your take on it, Stan. What do you think, just your gut feeling is, that what kind of correlation there is? Why are we seeing Bigfoot and UFO in the same spot?
Well, again, there's many unanswered questions. We can theorize, but I'm not so sure anybody, including our government, has the answers. I'm really of the belief that the government has had an interest for a long time in both UFOs and the Bigfoot phenomena. But you know, I think it's a good possibility that they're on the same along the same investigation line that I am, and we're dealing with something that's much, much stranger than an unknown type of primate, and they're trying to figure out themselves. And it, again, both of these phenomena, both UFOs and Bigfoot, they're a worldwide phenomenon. It's not just happening in Pennsylvania or the United States. It's happening all over the world. And yet very similar strange accounts like this have been happening all around the world. Nick Redfern and many other well-known researchers, they are very much aware of these kind of cases. And, you know, if you only had one or two people bringing these stories up, now you would be skeptical. But when there's so many reports from so many different people, and I'll give you an example because this was really fascinating to me because this has happened in recent weeks. This was another Bigfoot sighting that happened actually only miles from where I live. And the couple, the married couple involved, did not want to even call me or anybody to report it. But they went through a relative who contacted me and told me about what had happened. And finally, I was able to talk to the woman involved and gave me a very, very detailed account. And later, she sent me a four-page detailed written report of what her and her husband encountered that morning. I mean, they had driven this way to work early morning for years, apparently. They had never seen a thing. And this just happened in February of this year, so it was just weeks ago. And gave me a very detailed account of seeing this thing walk out in front of the vehicle about 50 feet away, 7 to 8 foot tall, you know, long hair, very detailed account. But the interesting thing was this, and she, even on the phone, she was so reluctant to tell me. But here's what she wrote down. And I'm trying to see this one part of the report. Said it seemed to happen so fast, it was long enough I could get a glimpse of him from head to toe, but it felt like he was gone before I could blink or even look away. I felt like in the movie Predator, how Predator can be invisible and then he can glitch out and you are able to see him. That's what I felt happened with Bigfoot. He was all of a sudden there out of nowhere and then disappeared. And that's the kind of thing we're getting from more and more people who don't know each other. It suddenly appears out of nowhere, they see it, and then it's gone. And it's just so amazing, just some reports in the last year. And these people have no reason to make these stories up. Most of these people have no interest in Bigfoot. But many of them are just having a hard time even dealing with the fact that they saw what they saw. And they're just happy to have somebody to talk to about it.
You know, I think a lot of us have a bit of a stereotype of what are typical Sasquatch behaviors. And some of those would be, you know, curiosity, peeking around trees. Some of them like to slap houses and throw rocks. Are any of those types of behaviors crossing over into some of these experiences?
Oh, yeah, that's very common. I mean, in so many reports, you have that. You know, we get a lot of reports. We always get more reports in the nicer times of the year, of course, spring and summer. But we get reports all year round. And, yeah, there's a lot of reports of them walking in front of vehicles, walking through cornfields. Over the years, people have seen them eat, for example, apples, corn, and berries. We have many cases where they're taking whole apples and popping a whole apple in their mouths. And they commonly occur more commonly in more rural areas, more forested areas and wooded areas. But we're seeing more and more reports in recent years in more populated areas and areas where there's not a lot of woods around, and that, and more reports about more even larger cities and outside of larger cities. So that's adding more and more to the mystery because where are they hiding? Where are they going? And so it gets stranger and stranger, and it's just very fascinating.
You know, that's just mind blowing to me. And to think of, you know, having an experience, let alone, you know, if you're going to have a Bigfoot experience, that is traumatic as it is. But then to have these other behaviors and these other types of factors, you know, vanishing, glowing eyes, being associated with UFOs and lights and orbs and that kind of thing. I think that just puts it into this other category that, you know, do your witnesses exhibit traumatic signs of trauma?
It's not something that it's very common. I mean, initially, a lot of people are pretty much unnerved about it. And a lot of these people I've kept in contact with over a period of time, but everybody's different as an individual. Some people, after they've seen it, they're more encouraged to go investigate the reports themselves, to look into it, to study about it. Some people, you know, were very frightened about it. Some people were very glad they had the experience. Other people wish they didn't. So everybody's different. Everybody handles it differently. And I know a lot of people, you know, over the years who it was a life-changing account for them. It was experience that changed their lives. But most people are curious and interested in it. I do a lot of lecturing on the topic. And I find a great reaction from the public there, from children to adults who are really intrigued about this now, and they want to learn more and are much more open-minded. I mean, I have a whole lecture I do on the strange aspects of the elusive Bigfoot is what my lecture is called. And I'm getting a very positive reaction from the general public about these kind of reports. But again, we're getting more people who are just giving us these strange accounts. Just in the last week or two, a brand new documentary came out that was done by Bilko Productions out of Virginia, and they invited me last year to be involved in it. It's called Paranormal Bigfoot, and it gets into all these different theories on why there's no bodies of Bigfoot and the fact that there's some strange elements to some of the Bigfoot phenomena. So it's something that's out there now, and a lot of people are beginning to discuss it and talk about it. But one thing I find with a lot of people in the Bigfoot community now, they're beginning to look into this much closer. They're hearing more reports. And in the last few years, from not only Pennsylvania but around the country, I'm hearing from many people in the Bigfoot field of Bigfoot investigators going out to local areas around the country where there's a history of Bigfoot activity, where they're out there investigating reports. And while they're not encountering Bigfoot, they're encountering strange orbs of light, strange light phenomena, things they could not explain. And that's something that's going on more and more from different people I hear who investigate Bigfoot reports.
And, you know, taking a kind of like a big step back and kind of assessing that from, you know, a 100,000 foot view, you know, could it be where we're at in the rotation of the Earth in relation to other galaxies? Could it be different, you know, spiritualism being at a different place than it used to be? Could it be changes in the Earth? Could it be, you know, those are all just kind of questions that I ask myself. I know we don't have the answer. What do you think?
Well, again, multitudes of theories out there, a lot of what you brought up have been discussed. What I found years ago and is still going on, and I have no doubt that there's a relationship here. Many close-range, low-level UFO encounters, and many close encounters with Bigfoot and other cryptids and entities commonly occur in the vicinity of high-energy sources. So you have many sightings around high-tension power lines, and you've got the power plants, and you've got radio communication towers, and you've got cell phone towers, and you have gas wells and gas lines and railroad tracks and reservoirs. There are many, many sightings around energy sources, and I have no doubt that there's an energy relationship between the various phenomena that we're dealing with.
And with you bringing that up, is that something that you've learned to measure on site to compare that data?
Well, it's something that's it's a common factor in so many of the reports. I mean, we began seeing this back in the least probably late 60s, and since then. Because so many of these sightings occur. I remember we're going out, some of my associates and I, a few years ago, went out to Woods Newton area where there's been a history of sightings down there since at least the late 60s. And a man and his daughter were riding down this dark road outside of West Newton, PA that evening, and suddenly this figure rides up from the right side of the road, steps out right in front of the road in front of them, and they have to swerve the car from missing this thing. And they look up and here's this 6.5-7 foot tall hairy creature with glowing eyes, and the guy's going down the road, and the thing's standing in the middle of the road staring at him. He looks in the rearview mirror, and the eyes are still glowing, so it's not a reflection from the headlights. And when we went down there to investigate it, We turned around, looked up, and the area is, I mean, here's a huge series of high-tension power lines and power towers going right over the area where the thing was. I mean, it's something that just keeps coming up constantly. Even that area where the fellow I mentioned to you down the Mon Valley a few months ago had encountered the creature 5 feet in front of him, and there was all kind of energy sources close by. It's a factor that keeps coming up more and more, and it's a common thing in so many reports.
It's pretty fascinating that there's that tie-in that you've been able to validate with your data. The low-level UFO sightings, the Bigfoot, and various cryptids, that one of the commonalities is the high-energy locations with the radio towers, the cell towers, gas wells, and whatnot. It really makes you, it answers one question, I guess, that's more likely where you're going to see one of those things. Is that correct?
I would say there's a pretty good chance if you're in a vicinity around there. You know, I've spent many days and nights over many, many years staking out areas with teams of research people. And I don't think I mentioned this earlier, but all the years I've been doing this year, 60 years, I have never seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself. I've interviewed thousands of people. I've seen a lot of physical evidence, but I've never had my own personal encounter.
That was actually going to be one of our questions, is we're like, you've pulled in all these reports for the past 60 plus years, and we were going to ask that, but that's interesting that you've never seen one. Have you had any strange experience while you've been investigating these reports?
Oh, yeah. There's been interesting things that have happened, I've written about them in my three books. And during that wave of 73 out there along the Chestnut Ridge out around Derry Township, where there were so many reports going on, and some of the farmers out there were reporting that these creatures would periodically come back on our property, so we tried to stake them out when we could. And there was one particular night when we had been out on the farm, and we were heading back when we got a radio call that the thing had just been back to the farm right after we left. So we traveled back there another 20, 30 minutes. We already had left the area. And the thing had been in the barnyard. There were tracks in the barnyard. The animals, again, wouldn't make a sound. It was dark. They had a very large cornfield, and there was something already moving bipedally, running ahead of us through the cornfield, making this very loud, asthmatic-like, heavy breathing sound. And we chased it in the dark. We recorded the sounds, but whatever it was, we could never catch up to it. So that was kind of interesting, among other reports.
So that might be one of the closest, quote-unquote, sightings or encounters that you may have experienced during your investigations.
Well, it was one of them. There was some other weird ones that went on, but there was a lot of very, very strange things that went on during that time period. There was indication there was some government interest in what was going on. There was some of that, what people would refer to probably as the mystery men or the men in black that showed up with some of the cases we had. It was an intriguing time, which is the reason why I did write my Silent Invasion book that went into great detail about all these weird cases and the phenomena and the indications some of these things were something more than just an unknown animal. And, I mean, ever since I wrote that book a number of years ago, I've had from all over the country around the world, there's been a huge response to it, because so many other people began to ask the same questions again, like, why don't we have a body by now? Why don't we have more tangible physical evidence? Yet you've got so many people seeing these things year after year. You've got some very good footprint castings. You've got some other data out there, but we should have a lot more physical evidence. And by now, if this was a normal flesh and blood animal, I think it'd be very likely that we should have a body by now to study.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And both James and I, we've talked about that before. Is there's not having a body, does that prove that they don't exist? Or does the sheer amount of sightings and encounters that people have, the tracks, the supposed hair and DNA samples that are left, is that enough for us to go off of, or do we have to have a body? And I know Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles, you've been on his show, and he states, even to this day, even through all the shows, we have to have a body. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm one of the guys that years ago, in the many days and nights and years we spent out in the field, we didn't go out there armed. And anyhow, you know, of the hundreds of Bigfoot cases I've investigated, and I've interviewed hundreds of people, and I get reports year after year from people, whatever these things are, generally, they don't appear to be aggressive to the point of going after somebody and trying to hurt them. Yes, on occasion, they'll throw some pretty good-sized rocks or small boulders or big tree branches towards people. But just to go out to hurt people, it's just something I don't run into. And so I think that as time goes on, as we develop better technology, we have better instrumentation, I think we're going to begin to understand scientifically some of this phenomena. Right now we just don't understand. It's beyond our present scientific understanding, I think, of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and it's interesting to study. And, you know, there's just so many questions surrounding all these sightings and all these cryptids. One of the questions we wanted to ask you, I guess, is probably a twofold question, is first, have you, out of all the reports that you've worked, whether it was some kind of weird cryptid, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or UFO, was there did anyone experience any violence or any physical contact with these creatures? And the second part of this question is, what's probably the strangest, most disturbing investigation that you've had on any of these things?
Oh, boy. Well, I can't think right offhand, and I have to go back thinking about it quite a bit. I don't recall, again, any case that I can think of where anybody was physically hurt by a creature that I can think of right now. I've had many cases where these things were extremely close. And I mean extreme, I'm talking within feet. We had the one incident up on the Chestnut Ridge up in Fayette County. That would have been now, I believe, 2 years ago. And one of my associate researchers, Jim Brown, investigated the report. The whole story is on my website. People can go back and look through and see the whole report. But it was a fascinating case. And that's actually the area where we're going to have the big 3-day Bigfoot adventure, camping adventure up there in Fayette County near Fairchance, PA, that's coming up. And they have a big website that you can look at as well. And I have their large display information on my website at this point. But that's an area that has a lot of Bigfoot activity. And this was in May of 2016. And there were two men riding down that road. It was a rainy night. And they're riding down the road, and suddenly from the left side embankment, this creature about 7 foot tall runs down the embankment and stops about 20 feet right in front of the vehicle with the two men in it. And it's standing there looking directly at them with, again, glowing red eyes, and they're looking back at this creature. And they said it was covered from head to toe with long black or very dark hair. Hair was so long they couldn't see facial features on it, but they could see the eyes. And they went into great detail. They didn't notice any strange smell or sound. But by the way, a lot of people talk about the odor with Bigfoot. Yes, in some cases it's very strong, rotten smell, but in many cases there's no smell whatsoever. And as they're watching this thing, at one point, they slowly move their car up towards the creature, and actually, as they move it slowly, the car makes contact with it and against its knees, and it puts its hands out, puts hands on the front of the car with a bumper against its legs, I should say, and the thing turned around and walked back down the road, and that was it. But they were very, very close to it, and it made physical contact with the car. We've heard a few other reports like that over the years, but they're not that common. There are so many cases I haven't. And again, I've talked about these in my lectures, and some of these cases are very, very strange and unusual. But the case that stands out, of course, and we could talk for hours about this case alone, but it was the case in 73 that really brought the phenomena to the attention of myself and my team. It made us realize that this phenomenon is much more complex than any of us could even begin to realize. That was the event that happened outside of Uniontown, Fayette County again, October 25th, 1973. I remember that night extremely well. I got a call from a state trooper from the Uniontown Barracks. He had just returned from this investigation, sounded a little nervous, and said he believed there was a good chance that there was still something up in the farm, up on the pasture, that he wanted me to get our team up there as soon as we could. Well, we were a pretty good distance away, and it was already late at night. We did. We got our team together. We packed up our equipment. We got our radios and our radiation gear and other equipment, and we found our way up to that area of Fayette County into that remote farm where this happens. And what I found out was that that evening, about 9 o'clock, there was about 15 people in that little rural area that observed this very large barn-sized red ball in the sky, hovering and moving slowly down towards the ground. And that ball, or whatever it was, apparently landed in this farmer's pasture. Well, it was seen by his son. His son was a big fellow, was coming out to visit his dad on his property, and he saw this thing coming down, and he went up to a neighbor's house up on the hill to get a better view of this thing. It didn't look like it was going to land, so he and two of those young neighbor boys decided they would go up to see what this thing was. Before they proceeded up to the pasture, they stopped over his dad's farm. He grabbed a handful of ammunition and a 30-06. And as they're driving down that farm road that night, the dogs all around the area barking crazy. They hear this very loud whining noise and this high-pitched, like a baby crying sounds. And it's getting louder and louder. They're getting closer to that area where the pasture is. And they kind of angle their truck and leave the headlights on so they can see where they're going. And they realize it looks like something's trying to drain the power from the headlights. They had never noticed that before. So they make their way up to the top of the hill, up to the pasture. And they're standing there because they can't understand what they're seeing. About 250 feet away, what was that big round sphere is now on the ground and right above it. But now it's a big white dome, like a half a sphere, like a big dome. About 100 feet or more in diameter, illuminating the whole area, making this large whining noise. They're studying this thing, trying to figure it out, but then it gets stranger when their attention is drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. Along the barbed wire fence are these two tall, hairy Bigfoot creatures walking very slowly, stiffly, one behind the other towards them. The one in the front is the tallest, is about 8 feet tall. The one behind is about 7 feet tall. They went into great detail what these things look like, with a long, dark matted hair hanging off the body and the arms. The arms are so long, they're hanging down past the knees, almost to the ground. They have no neck. They have luminous, glowing green eyes. They're making that baby crying, whining noise. Oh, the one kid's so scared, he leaves. He jumps up, runs out of the field. The other kid starts screaming, "Shoot him, shoot him." Well, the guy takes his first shot. He didn't realize at the time, but his first two ammunition he was using were tracer rounds. So you just get that luminous trail when you shoot them. He fired the first tracer, no effect. He fired the second tracer, and when he did, the largest of the two creatures reached out, made that loud whining noise, crying noise, reached out as though to grab the tracer, and the moment it did that, that object in the field suddenly vanished and disappeared. It didn't take off. It just disappeared. It was gone. And the creatures turned around and started walking back towards the woods along the barbed wire fence. So the guy at that point is now firing live ammo from the 30-06 towards the creatures, mainly aiming at the largest one. And he said, "I know I hit that thing. I've been hunting for years. I know I hit it, but there was no effect on it whatsoever." So they ran back to their truck, went to the farmhouse, took the family to a neighbor's and called the state police. When the trooper arrived about 45 minutes later, the witness said, "Look, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm nuts." And the trooper said, "Look, we had a report of two similar creatures up on the mountain the night before. I have to investigate the report." So they went up with the troop car up into that area, and the trooper told me, and this is a brief part of the story without going into great detail. We could talk for hours about this. I read it off my Silent Invasion book, the whole story. It's very, very strange and long. Anyhow, when they got up there, he said the whole area where the object was on the ground was glowing. It was self-luminescent glowing, about 100 feet, 100, 150 feet or so in diameter. He said He shined his flashlight beam into it, could barely see it. He said the farm animals wouldn't go anywhere near it, and if he had a newspaper, he could read the newspaper for the glow coming off the glowing area. They went back to the barracks, and both the trooper and the witness were taken to separate rooms and separately interviewed before they called my team up. And that's just a short part of the story. It got even weirder during the night. That was the case that convinced us that there was a lot more to the Bigfoot phenomena and UFO phenomena than any of us could ever imagine. And that was a very, very detailed investigation that went on for a long time by different sources. And everybody went away convinced that these witnesses were all telling the truth.
Wow, that's so mind-blowing to me, you know. And I think that was probably the impression you had at the time was, you know, your paradigm was one way before going into it, and then on the other side, totally different.
Well, it's sure something we didn't expect. That, you know, in all those weird cases that began to show up, we weren't out looking for those kind of reports. I mean, my opinion was, when I started investigating Bigfoot in Pennsylvania in the late 60s, that Bigfoot was probably an unknown type of primate, an unknown type of animal species. But as time went on, and these various cases came to our attention from so many different people, and all these little details began to show up, similar reports from so many people, you couldn't dismiss it. And now it's been continuing for years and years, and then last year we have that surgery report, even the one we talked about this year, and you can't just dismiss it and say it's not going on. Something is happening. We don't know what it is.
Wow. Well, thanks so much for expounding on all those different stories. I feel like we're just scraping the tip of the iceberg with you. Now, we were wanting to talk about Kecksburg, but I think that is a whole separate show.
We could talk for days and days about Kecksburg. Yeah, people that don't want to get in touch with me, they can look at my website, which is stangordon.info, I-N-F-O. My contact information, my email's on there if they want to reach me. My books are all available at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. But people, even though I deal mainly in Pennsylvania, many people from around the country do contact me.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on the show, and we'll have to have you back on, definitely.
Well, thanks for having me on. We enjoyed it.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you had as much fun listening to Stan as we did. If you feel so inclined, we'd like you to check out our Patreon page. That is at patreon.com/LostRiverLegends. We also have a growing subscribership or listenership on YouTube. Feel free to check us out there if that's more convenient for you. We definitely are a podcast platform, first and foremost, so make sure that you subscribe there if that's your preference. Thanks so much, and enjoy your time. Have a good day.